You ready?
This is the Mike Salk Show, serviced by Jaffco Plumbing and Sewer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Are you ready?
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Are you ready for a good team?
253 says, Salk, I use that line on my ad sales manager. With my brains and your brawn, we'll have a record year in Caterpillar sales. He didn't take it well.
Caterpillar sales. That's awesome.
Why would you need to sell caterpillars? What are they?
Caterpillars,
worth?
Get
they
out.
Turn into butterflies?
I had a buddy who went to diesel tech school.
Yeah.
And is now way high up in Caterpillar.
Yeah.
Crushes. Does so well. And
really?
I'm
sure. It's a huge company.
Massive.
Yeah, absolutely.
I can't imagine, man, working on those motors. I can't imagine how hard that would be.
Big day today as baseball released its Hall of Fame vote. There are currently, I don't know if you guys follow Ryan Thibodeau. He's sort of the guru of baseball Hall of Fame voting. He tracks it all with the Baseball Hall of Fame tracker. And kind of fun to follow this time of year. Obviously, it was big for a lot of Seattle fans as Edgar was going through this process earlier. But three names right now currently above the 75% line. You got to get 75% of votes in order to get into the Hall of Fame. David Ortiz, who is in his first year of eligibility, he's at 83.5. Barry Bonds at 77, and Roger Clemens at 76. Scott Rolen at 69, almost 70. And then Curt Schilling in his last year is down to 61. So it doesn't look like Schilling's going to be there. I mean, it's interesting to me that we've yet to really see the steroid guys go in. Mark McGwire's time went all the way through, all 10 years passed. He didn't get in. And now all of a sudden it looks like Bonds is likely to get in, and so is Roger. Both guys explicitly linked to steroids. My red game of shadows. Barry Bonds used steroids.
Yep.
That is like not even really a question, and used a tremendous amount of them. Roger Clemens almost assuredly did the same thing and has other issues in his past as well. Why are they going in but not Sammy Sosa, who has 608 career home runs, not Alex Rodriguez, who was the best player of his era and yet is being voted into the Hall of Fame right now at a level of about 38%. Why not Manny Ramirez is at 36? You can make a case maybe Manny doesn't belong in the Hall of Fame anyway. Okay, fine. But A-Rod? Of course A-Rod belongs in the Hall of Fame, just in terms of the numbers, in terms of what he did in the game. So what is the criteria that we're using here? I don't understand it. I would vote for every one of those guys. Ortiz, yes. Absolutely. What he did in the postseason belongs in the Hall of Fame. Bonds, best player in the game, bar none. Roger Clemens, best pitcher in the game, along with a couple of others, for decades. What are we talking about? Of course they're in the Hall of Fame, but so was Sammy Sosa with over 600 home runs. So should have been Mark McGwire. He and Sammy Sosa saved the game of baseball with their home run chase. What they did belongs to those accomplishments. We can't just ignore them because later we didn't like that they were on roids. We suspected it in the moment. Nobody did jack squat, including the league.
Yeah.
They essentially promoted it. And for us to then turn around and I don't discredit it.
Now have the moral candle to say, oh, no, what you did then was wrong.
Please. Everybody loved it in the moment. So I would put all those guys in. 206-421-3776. We'll check in with you guys. Start off with Evan, who's in Puyallup. Evan, you get the first word here today. What's up, my man?
Hey, thanks for having me.
Sure.
But maybe I'm crazy, but I just think if you're linked to steroids, kind of like Barry Bonds, and he just repeatedly have known for just doing it for years. I just feel like that's cheating, and he's using something to make himself better, and that's going to escalate his numbers. So, and I don't really remember personally like David Ortiz getting popped for taking steroids. Maybe he did. I don't remember.
Well, he was linked. So David Ortiz was linked. He was linked. He was linked to a steroid dealer as well. Doesn't mean he did it, but he was certainly linked. I mean, we don't have hard, concrete evidence on most of these guys. A-Rod obviously had the suspension, so that's a little bit different. But we don't have hard, concrete evidence. But David Ortiz was also linked to performance-enhancing drugs. We don't talk about it as much.
It's a weird thing. It comes down to their likability, too. People don't like A-Rod in so many ways.
Right. Although now all of a sudden he's going to do like the Manning cast thing. Now it's cool to like A-Rod again.
Well, he's done his whole almost apology tour. Didn't he do that rehabilitation show where trying to help people like change their images?
Yeah. So what? So that gets you into the Hall of Fame
after
maybe one day?
Twice denying
steroids
when he did that.
And how much crow do they have to eat in order for you to be like, okay.
Right, Andy Pettit's okay not getting now. Any votes to go into the Hall of Fame. Maybe you don't think he's a Hall of Famer anyway, but he was one of the better pitchers of his era. Mm-hmm. And I just, I don't really understand. I don't know. Put him in the Hall of Fame.
Pettit at least admitted it right away. Huh? Most of these guys lie through their teeth until they can't anymore.
Was it Pettit who misremembered? He was the one who misremembered, right?
I thought he admitted it pretty much as soon as he got
I think
popped.
Later he did. I think at first he misremembered, and then he was like, yeah,
Clemens says Pettit misremembered him.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's what it was. Yeah. Sorry, I was confusing. You're right. Clemens said that Pettit must have misremembered what they did together.
Yep.
Yeah, that happens. 206-421-3776. Let's grab Dimitri in Maple Valley. What's up?
By the way, Mike, this is your doppelganger, the psychiatrist.
Oh, wow.
And my take is that this is, and this is a call out of Baseball Writers Association of America on hypocrisy and false sanctimony. You know that everybody knows that performance enhancing drugs have been a fixture of professional sports forever. And it's just that the difference is the culture of media reporting and what was considered out of bounds decades ago is no longer out of bounds. And so we all know about it. And so basically, it's about the numbers. If somebody's numbers merit being in the Hall of Fame, then they should merit being in the Hall of Fame.
Well, I tend to agree with that. What would you say then about folks like Curt Schilling or Pete Rose? Because there is a character clause. Would you put either of those two guys in the Hall of Fame?
Well, so I think this is where we have to understand that we can't be black and white here in this, and that there are gray areas and nuance, right? It's one thing to gamble against your own team, potentially affecting the outcome in that respect.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact is that, and I'm not condoning performance-enhancing drugs or saying that that's how it should be done. But it's just that it's so ubiquitous and has been that the idea that we're just going to discount. I mean, come on.
Yep.
Barry Bonds was going to make the Hall of Fame, whether he did.
He was, and yet there's a lot of people that want to keep him out. Appreciate the call, Dimitri. 206-421-3776. Corey's in Puyallup. Hi, Corey.
How you guys doing?
Good, man.
I personally think Bonds should get in. I mean, he's one of the greatest with or without steroids. Just because you do steroids doesn't make you good at the game either, by
true.
The way.
True. Very true.
And I don't think Clemens should get in. I think pitchers are different. I got a weird view on it, but I don't know. I feel like batters, you still need a lot more pitchers. I mean, you can just do roids. I mean, I feel like not necessarily, but I mean, if you're a good athlete, you got a lot easier shot of being a pitcher doing good with roids than a batter, in my opinion.
I don't know, man. I don't know that that's necessarily true. I mean, the way that those guys' strength popped off.
It's just a weird thing that I think.
Okay.
And I think Manny should get in. Sammy, probably he's on the border.
Are you just choosing guys that you like versus guys you don't? Because I'm not sure that there's any consistency to that. I mean, there's some of these guys that I hate Roger Clemens like the devil himself, man. And I would vote him in because he deserves to be in. Roger Clemens was, I mean, if you want to talk personal bias, he was my favorite player growing up. I loved Roger Clemens.
Did that change?
Yeah.
Okay.
When he said that he would never go to the Yankees, he might leave. I mean, when he tanked his last couple career years in Boston, got fat and pathetic and was terrible, and then left and decided to lose weight and then start using steroids and get good elsewhere.
Well,
yeah.
Steroid use aside, it was like his reaction to everyone accusing him and how much of a jerk he was.
Yeah.
I think that
Roger Clemens
is
a jerk.
Everyone.
He's a jerk. So is Barry Bonds. Both guys are kind of a jerk, but they're Hall of Famers. What are we kidding? Plenty of guys who are jerks in the Hall of Fame. Now, Curt Schilling might be, that's where my personal bias would probably I just couldn't even do it. I couldn't vote for Curt Schilling. I don't care if he won 3,000 games. I wouldn't vote for Curt Schilling on general principle.
Well, then you can't say I don't care if Roger Clemens is a jerk.
Well, I think Schilling has said some things that go beyond the pale. I mean, I think when you're talking about murdering journalists and that type of stuff, I think Kurt has kind of taken that character clause thing and taken it too far. And I don't, you know, I just, you know, personally don't like him. I've had issues, you know, incidents with him on the air and stuff. I think it would be personal for me, and I'm not necessarily proud of that, but that's how I would handle it. As for the other guys, I also just think they are also, Schilling's a borderline Hall of Famer, not a clear-cut Hall of Famer, whereas the other guys are clear-cut. I just don't see how you can keep them out. But mm-hmm. Danny in Chicago will disagree. What's up, Danny? What do you think?
I'm good, Mike. How you doing? I'm keeping them out. I understand the argument of putting them in just based on their merits, and I agree. They were all the best players of their generation, and just on that alone, they deserve to get in.
Say this out loud, Danny. Will you repeat after me? You ready?
I can repeat after you, sure.
Craig Biggio is in the Hall of Fame.
Craig Biggio is in the Hall of Fame.
Okay. And then I want you to say Alex Rodriguez is not in the Hall of Fame.
And Alex Rodriguez is not in the Hall of Fame.
How does that sound?
That's wrong.
Does that make any sense when you say that out loud?
It sounds wrong.
Okay.
But so is taking steroids.
There he is. Not a baby Danny.
That's a really good argument.
I think that, you know, the other caller's right. Steroids doesn't help you hit a baseball, right? You still got to hit it. But what steroids really, really does, more than what people talk about, it doesn't add 5 feet to your home run. It keeps you healthy for 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason that all these guys have the numbers to make it to the Hall of Fame is because they played for 25 years. And most humans just can't do that.
Yeah, I think some of that's true. I don't know. The other thing, though, with steroids, it made a lot of guys break down. I don't know whether they got better steroids or they were using the HGH or whatever. But I don't know. I don't know whether I totally buy that argument. Part of the problem with the steroid guys is a lot of them broke down because they got so muscular, right? I mean, that they weren't able to keep it up. They ended up tearing muscles all the time. I don't know.
I also don't really take the argument that it didn't add 5 feet to your home run. We don't know. It made them stronger. It could have added a little velocity. It could have a little bat speed. And some of those home runs may not have been.
I think it absolutely did those things.
Yeah.
Right? I mean,
I know it doesn't improve your hand-eye coordination. It doesn't improve your being able to catch spin rates. All of those things are in things that you have or you don't.
Yeah. Let me grab Josh in Tacoma real quick. Josh, go ahead.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Real quick, I think both Bonds and Clemens should get in. I watched them from a young age when they were skinny. These guys were Hall of Famers before they ever blew up.
You watched skinny Roger Clemens? What was he, 8?
When I was a kid?
He wasn't skinny. He may not have been using steroids, but he was anything but skinny.
Well, he was skinnier than when he got on the roids.
Right.
I mean, he bulked up. But another separate take, as I mentioned when they were screening the call, and this isn't mine, Bob Costas brought this up, and I was like, that nails it. And for me, it's, how many players are in the Hall of Fame for being greats of their time, but it was before integration and they didn't play black, mm-hmm. Asian, or Hispanic players?
Mm-hmm.
Think of the MLB today without black, Asian, or Hispanic players. How many players would look incredible when they're basically playing like
mm-hmm.
a fraction of all the great players out there? And they're in, and they're considered some of the greatest of all time.
Yeah, so the argument essentially, Josh, because I got to run here, I'm guessing what you're saying is the argument is, you know, you got to be the best of your era and accept what that era is, whether it's limitations or, in this case, some of the opposite of limitations, the enhancements that led to the numbers that we got. That's how I feel. And apparently some of the voters are starting to come around to that with Barry Bonds and with Roger Clemens likely to make it in later today. I just don't understand, if them, why not everyone else? If them, why not Sammy Sosa? If them, why not Alex Rodriguez? If you're going to start and open the floodgates, then open them up. Open the dam. Let that thing burst and put the guys who put the best numbers up into the Hall of Fame. Time for Need to Know.
Need to Know.
15 minutes past every hour with Mike Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Does Tom Brady's future matter to you as an NFL fan? Yeah, probably. But as a Seahawks fan, maybe you hadn't thought about it, but it should. 7-time Super Bowl winner is, and yes, Justin, it's 7 times for the record.
Yeah, you're welcome.
That he's won the Super Bowl. Thanks. He's mulling his options following this season and said yesterday that he is undecided about what to do next year.
If the NFC South...
That is not what I want. Let me give you actual Tom Brady.
Playing football, I get so much joy from. I love it. But not playing football, there's a lot of joy in that for me also now, too, with my kids getting older and seeing them develop and grow. So all these things need to be considered, and they will be.
Why does that cut make me laugh every time? Playing football brings me joy, but also not playing football brings me joy. Just something funny.
Maybe he wants to eat nightshades finally. Maybe that's it.
Who could blame him? If he indeed does hang him up, it would mean the Bucs would be in the market for a new quarterback and possibly rebuilding after this run as Brady and Gronk probably exit. Seahawks will play the NFC South next year, though, so Tampa will be on their schedule. Once you factor in the rest of the division, John Clayton telling me yesterday it could add up to a really nice thing for the Seahawks next year, including a playoff appearance.
If the NFC South doesn't have Brady at Tampa Bay, doesn't have Sean Payton over at New Orleans, you've got Matt Rhule, who's probably going to get fired at Carolina. Atlanta's just average right now. And they play that, along with the fact that they play the fourth place schedule, where they get the Jets, the Giants, a couple teams like that.
Seahawks are going to play some bad teams next year and do have an opportunity. You can see why they've decided not to rebuild, but to try to move forward, right? 7-10 last year, best division in football, two NFC championship teams playing, and three playoff teams overall. They had an injured quarterback. They had the wrong defensive coordinator. They had a new offensive coordinator who was a rookie play caller, and they had a little bad luck along the way. Yeah, they still managed to finish strong and have a weak schedule next year. So, yeah, I understand why they're continuing to go for it. But if you're going to go for it, go for it. Right? You still have work you need to do. Improve your pass rush. Improve the defensive line. Improve the offensive line as well. And some of that does need to come through marquee players, big names in free agency. Obviously, a route that they have traditionally avoided.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
We spent some time talking about the Baseball Hall of Fame. Results will be released today. We could see up to three players inducted. David Ortiz has been leading the way in his first year of eligibility. He is likely to get in. Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens, both trending just above the line. So we'll see. This is their last year. Whether they get in or not depends on some of the anonymous late ballots that will come in. Scott Rolen gaining some momentum in his fifth year. He'll likely fall just short. And same with Curt Schilling, who is likely to fall short in his last year as well. As I said, put in Bonds, put in Clemens, but put in Sosa. 609 home runs, OPS nearly 900. Put in Mark McGwire, just short of 600 home runs, home run king, champion, all of that. What his season in 1998 did for the game. Those guys belong in the Hall of Fame as well. In the meantime, the league is meeting with the players union again today. Apparently yesterday went well enough that they decided to meet again today. That's great news. We heard some signs of progress. Players are willing to drop some of their previous demands and lower the ask on others. That's great. More specifically, players agreed to drop their proposal for age-based free agency. It means the two sides will now negotiate on whether free agency should start after 6 years now or be lowered to five. Players also backed off their ask that the revenue sharing to the small market teams be cut by $100 million a year. They're now asking it to be closer to $30 million. I tend to side with the players on a few of these issues, so I'm not sure this is the best thing for the game long term, but I do believe it helps them get to an agreement sooner, and that's a good thing. I also think the players have a good argument for raising that league minimum from $570 to $775. But on other issues, I'm not sure that the players are holding out for the right reasons. I don't want them to hold out to change the draft so that we have a lottery. That's just not that important to me. And quite frankly, I'm not even sure I'm in favor of raising the competitive balance tax to a higher threshold so that, what, three or four teams at the top end up spending more and you have a higher competitive disadvantage? I'm not into that at all. It's much more to me about the teams at the bottom than the ones at the top. Regardless, the sides will meet again today as they work to get something done before spring training is set to start in a few weeks.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Kraken will get back to it tonight, trying to keep up the success that they've had recently. They've won three of four due to some improved goaltending, fewer turnovers, at least costly ones, and a timely goal or two. Nashville will be in town tonight. Preds have one of the best records in the league, but have lost four of their last six. You might remember that that's where the Kraken won their first game. It was the first win in team history when they played in Nashville. Brandon Tanev is injured and is going to miss the rest of this year. We've known that for a while, but he's not going to disappear. In fact, sounds like we may be seeing a little bit more of him in the future. He will essentially become a public ambassador for the team while he recuperates, and that role should allow him to be a semi-frequent guest on the Root Sports broadcasts, where he's hoping to have some fun.
I'm going to go up there and just try to keep things light, you know, if the opportunity comes to go up there and just have some fun. Obviously, it's a different aspect that I'm not used to, and I think it's going to be an opportunity to have some fun and connect with everybody in the broadcast booth, you know, have some fun, maybe throw some subtle jabs at some teammates along the way and see how they take it. But no, it's just a great opportunity, you know, the team presented, and it's going to be a fun one.
Yeah, it's pretty cool, the deal that he's going going to do that. Light schedule for the NBA last night. Suns winning the biggest matchup with the Jazz. Devin Booker was great. 33 points. Chris Paul, he rebounds short of a triple-double. Cavs sneak by the Knicks. New Orleans over Indiana. And the Bulls win over Oklahoma City, even without DeMar DeRozan. That is everything you need to know. We do that quarter past every hour, every morning here on the Mike Salk Show.
So what we've learned is everybody has a different measuring stick. Everybody's got a different litmus test.
Yes.
There is no one way or one stat or one war or anything that's going to say that you are Hall of Fame worthy. Correct.
True.
Right?
Yes.
So
agreed.
Could it be, I'm trying to think of the Sosa argument here. Did he not do enough to elevate the team the same way Ortiz may have?
Well,
I know it's not just Ortiz. That was a stacked team.
But everybody has sort of their own case for getting into the Hall of Fame, right? Like for me, David Ortiz's case, he's got good numbers over the course of his career. He ended up having what is close to being a Hall of Fame career in the regular season. But what puts David Ortiz over the top are just the unbelievable postseason moments in multiple seasons, right? So I to me, David Ortiz is a Hall of Famer. In terms of the regular season, he had 541 home runs, so he's in the 500 home run club. Mm-hmm. He did it from 1997 to 2016, so in 20 years. He has a career OPS of 931. His last year in the league, he had a 1,021 OPS. David Ortiz is a home run candidate for the Hall of Fame just when you look at the regular season. But his candidacy is really about what he did in the postseason and all of the success and the many titles
sure.
and the role he played in it all. So everyone kind of has their own, you know, Jeff, we talked about Biggio earlier, Craig Biggio. I wouldn't put him in the Hall of Fame, but his reasoning and his candidacy is built on doing it pretty well for an incredibly long time at the position he played.
Okay.
For me, I would keep this fairly simple. If you're in the Hall of Fame, it should be because you were among the best in your era at your position at the time. That's I would keep it very simple. Were you one of the best in the game at your time? If so, you're in the Hall of Fame. And if not, you're not. Right?
Yeah.
Was David Ortiz one of the best at his? Yes.
No question.
Was Manny Ramirez? Maybe. Was Barry Bonds? Of course he was. He was the best. Was Roger Clemens? Yes. Was Sammy Sosa? Yeah, I would say he was for enough time that I would put him in the Hall of Fame. I'm going to guess that it's a length of how long he was great, right? That's what's keeping him out. It's just that he was so great during that time that he managed to put up over 600 home runs. That's a Hall of Famer.
Just happy
Sorry.
Edgar made it. I'm just happy Edgar made it.
Yes, he
that
did.
Had to happen.
I'm glad everybody was happy about Edgar. That was close, and that was a lot of fun last year. Waiting to see him get in. All right, Brock Heward will join me next, and then we've got a good ranked for you today based on some of the conversation built from Sunday night. So don't go anywhere. We got a lot more to come. Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
Brock and Salk.
With my brains and your brawn, we'll make an excellent team.
Every morning at 7:45 and 9:30, presented by Top Fitness Store on the Mike Salk Show.
Brock Heward is my hero.
What Brock Heward says?
No, he's not a friend of mine.
Subscribe to receive new episodes of the Brock and Salk podcast at Apple Podcasts or on Google Podcasts.
Hey, buddy. Good morning.
Good morning, Michael. You feeling better today?
Me? Oh, good yesterday. Yeah. What do you mean? I feel good.
Well, did Heather read you a story last night? Because it sounded like you were wired up and fired up about this overtime.
Still am. I still am fired up about it. Thankfully, 77% of people seem to agree with me, so I feel a little bit like a little bit. Here, let me give you one last suggestion on this. What would you think of this?
Okay, but
what if you're not going to be willing to change the rules of overtime to make it fair for both sides? Would you consider in the playoffs giving the home team, the team with the better seed, the ball in overtime rather than the ridiculousness of the coin toss?
Sure. Yep. I'd be just fine with that. So, that visiting team knows we go to overtime. We're going to have to D up right away. And this is the payoff for them, being the higher seed for a better overall record, for earning that right. Sure. Sure. I would absolutely. I'd be just fine with that.
I could live with that. I would live with that because, look, you're saying the regular season matters and you did something because 10 of the 11 teams that have won the coin toss in the playoffs have won the game. I mean, at some point, that's not even. At some point, it's not just go stop them. Like 10 of 11 teams becomes an overwhelming number of I mean, that's that you can't ignore that. So, okay, say that you earned that right during the regular season. It's part of your home court advantage or home field advantage.
Yeah, I'm good with that. No, I just saw that you got Heather involved. She got you on the couch
yes,
last night.
You know it.
To walk through this, so I'm good. Okay, I'm good.
All right, I got a question for you. As you yeah. watch these teams and these quarterbacks these days, I'm not looking for an updated quarterback ranking. But has anything changed in the qualities you're looking for in a quarterback as you watch some of these young kids?
Ooh. I feel like, and I think I tweeted this Saturday as well or Sunday that Allen and Mahomes are just not human. I mean, what their talents are so rare. That throw Mahomes made around like Matrix style around that defender, Mike, like 20 years ago, nobody even attempts that. Like you just kind of throw it out of bounds or they win that play. But these guys, you know, I think more than ever, honestly, in some ways, my answer is like back to the future, like go back to finding those players. Josh Allen was a 2-star recruit. Patrick Mahomes was a 3-star recruit. Part of the reason for that was because they just played, right? You watch Mahomes, you watch Allen, you see kids that played other sports. Mahomes was a phenomenal baseball player. Obviously, his dad was a pro baseball player. Josh Allen grew up on a farm, and he just played. He didn't have a QB guru. He didn't train one sport 7 days a week. They're just dynamic. They're dynamic in their competitiveness and their athleticism. So I actually think I go back to answer your question. While these guys are doing things we could never do in our generation, I think those two in particular are a prime example to just play and be well-versed athletically to do a lot of things. That also being said, I mean, Mahomes, the only dual-threat guy left, right? Garoppolo plays between the tackles. Stafford plays between the tackles. You know that Joe Burrow plays between the tackles. So I think, once again, your ability to process all three of those guys can play the game, have got their teams on this stage because they can see and process the game.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's a hard one to evaluate. That's a hard one to project. That's a hard one from junior high to high school, from high school to college, and certainly college to pro, to continue to project how they process and see the game from the neck up.
Yeah, I think that's all true. I don't know whether I would say, I mean, Burrow especially is definitely not a statue back there. I mean, he can run around a little bit, right, and make some plays with his legs.
I mean, he was sacked nine times on Saturday.
Well, that's so fine. Russell's been sacked about a million times in his career. He's still a dual threat guy who can run. I mean, I would say Burrow can move around. None of them are statues. You're not talking about, you know, a decrepit Peyton Manning with the Broncos back there. I mean, like, they can move a little bit.
You got to be able to move a little bit. You got to be able to, you know, run your play action and your nakeds and do those things. And Burrow, you know, he is a good athlete. He, too, was a kid that played other sports and basketball and just a dynamic guy all the way around. But I do think in a day and age where there has been, and certainly Josh Allen's a QB run guy, Mahomes extends plays phenomenally, it's certainly a dual threat nature. It is a little unique this year that three of the final four standing really do their damage between the tackles. And I think that points to you've still got to be able to do that. You know, it's icing on the cake. It is a bonus if you can run. It is tremendous for our team if you can escape and get out of trouble and save the day for your coordinator and your offense and everything else. But when you get to this stage and the speed is so fast, you better be able to process and see the game very, very quickly. And I think all four of these guys certainly do that.
Yeah, I think there's truth to that. And I love that you go towards the whole range idea. Brady, another one who played baseball, was drafted, right, as a baseball player. Did Peyton play multiple sports or was he a guy that kind of focused on football early?
No, he played basketball and baseball in high school. And in fact, I was watching him when we transitioned to him coaching his son's baseball team play. I'm like, did you play? He's like, oh, baseball was my first love. I was like, really? Pitcher and shortstop. And yeah, you know, he played. I don't know if you saw the video of his nephew, by the way, Arch, down there in Louisiana. Big nephew or a big video was going viral this weekend, Mike, of Arch playing basketball, and both Kirby Smart and Nick Saban there in the gym watching him. And by the way, Buff Dude Report, Arch Arch.
Stop.
Big old buff dude.
Stop it. He's too young. Stop it. Enough. I'm going to save you from. No. I'm going to talk over you and save you from
Uncle
yourself.
Uncle Eli.
No.
Uncle Eli and Uncle Peyton
Stop
do
it.
Not hold a candle physically.
Stop it. Stop
to,
it. Enough, dude.
Okay, that's
Stop
it. Right.
That is
right.
Disgusting. Take it down. My God, it was he's in high school. It's funny you bring it up, too. I was watching, you know, as I tend to do, some college golf yesterday as I was at home. And they were showing this kid from Texas.
Well,
what?
Stop it.
I'm not.
No. If you're going to stop me watching Arch playing basketball and evaluating him athletically,
no.
I'm going to stop you watching high school golf.
College golf, man, first of all. And second of all, I was only stopping you from talking about a high school kid's body. That's all. This is in your best interest. No, this guy from Texas.
I'm talking about his athleticism.
No, you're
go
not.
On.
No, you're not. You're talking about something else. In any event, this kid from Texas, they were talking about how he was a great high school quarterback and a great baseball player. And they're showing him and all the pictures of him in high school and how he's, you know, currently choosing golf, but how hard it was for him and talking about some of that specialization. Golf's a sport in which you probably can specialize a little bit earlier because of the repetitive nature of it. But
yep.
Even still, you know, some of the lessons learned from the other parts of life can be super valuable.
I don't think there's any question about that. And your guy, Jordan Spieth, speaks to that. And
sure.
And I think I told this story before of Terrell Pryor back at Ohio State. And I was actually telling this young QB yesterday, Montana State's got a super young, talented freshman quarterback that took him to the title game. Great kid. And we were chatting last night. And he just kind of was asking me about, you know, how do you handle, you know, just such a performance base? Everything is judged. And I said, well, do you play golf? Because that's what Jim Tressel did with Terrell Pryor back at Ohio State. He was a perfectionist. It was all about got to do everything right. And Tressel said, hey, you're going to take golf second semester. And he's like, I never played golf. He's like, that's right. It's going to be good for you. You're going to have to fail. You're going to chunk shots. You're going to have to learn from it. And it will be the best thing for you. So that can be a good training mechanism, too.
I wonder how many clubs he ended up breaking along the way. I would imagine a couple. Thanks, buddy. We'll talk tomorrow.
Sounds good, buddy.
There you go. Brock Huard every morning at 7:45 and again at 9:30. And I don't know about talking about the power source of a high school kid like Arch Manning, but whatever. It's a good point he makes about some of the, you know, the multiple sport athletes and how helpful it is not specializing at an early age. It's hard to do and hard to stick to it. I know. I mean, I see people kind of going through the youth sports thing. But, gosh, it really can pay a lot of dividends down the road. All right, let's finish this thing off by ranking things, as we do every day at 9:45. This is more of a dual list than a single list. That's next. Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
Got a list? Time to put it in order.
Fred Dwumfor's house. Top five meals that I have ever had.
This is Ranked.
To be honest, that list was really biased.
Brought to you by Carter Volkswagen. Every morning at 9:45 on the Mike Salk Show.
That top 10 list. I'm not buying that.
Ranked.
All right, we are ranking things every day at 9:45. Tomorrow we'll have Matt Hasselbeck with us as we do on Wednesdays here during the football season. Only a few more weeks left with Matt. So... We were wondering if you guys had anything you wanted Matt to rank.
Yeah, we're running out of time with him, so if there's something that you think we've just drastically missed,
send us a text.
Speak up.
Yeah, 206-421-3776. You can text us. Anything you'd like to hear Matt rank, anything you think would bring out good stories with Matt or things you would be amused by him ranking, 206-421-3776. We'll take any ideas you got, or you can always hit one of us up on Twitter as well. All right. With the great, great game on Sunday night and the budding rivalry forming here individually between Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen, we started thinking about the greatest individual one-on-one rivalries in sports. So not team rivalries, right? Not Alabama-Auburn or Red Sox-Yankees or anything like that, but individual rivalries that have formed in sports over the years. So it's really hard to narrow this down to five. And one of my regrets here is that we're not going to go with anything from the world of tennis. Tennis has built a tremendous number of rivalries over the years. Obviously, most recently, you would point to Federer and Nadal.
That's its own list.
They have played each other 40 times, which is obviously a lot. But it's nothing compared to Chris Evert, Martina Navratilova, whom... who played each other. Let's see. Martina was 36-24 against Chris Everett just in the finals of
so
tournaments.
60 matches in the finals.
Just in finals. That doesn't include how many times they played overall. They contested 80 matches overall against each other. One of them held the number one spot in the tennis rankings every single week except for one for like 12 years. It's pretty crazy.
Bonkers.
I mean, cool, and plus the completely contrasting styles, right, in both of those cases, but especially Chris Everett and Martina. I mean, just couldn't be more contrasting in the way they played. One was serve and volley. The other was more of a backcourt player. The way they looked, the way they acted, like all of it was just completely different. And I think you would probably say the same for Jimmy Connors and John McEnroe, who also played each other a gazillion times. It's funny, I think of Connors winning more because he won a few majors against him, but head-to-head, McEnroe actually led 20-14 in the 34 times they played against each other. But again, two completely different styles, and what did Connors say? Something like that never goes away, especially between Mac and myself. To have carried on this rivalry for so many years must mean we made our mark somewhere. So yeah, there was a lot of contention to that one. Unfortunately, no tennis made the list here. We'll start in boxing. Muhammad Ali and Joe Frazier, I think, would be number five on my list. They fought three times. Frazier was the first person to not knock out Ali, right? He beat him the first time, or to beat Ali, excuse me. And then Ali beat him the second time. Then they fought. Both of those fights went the distance. The third time was the thriller in Manila, and Ali won that one as well.
So three fights. So I was going to say three interactions.
Yes.
Still make the top five.
Yeah, I think just for all the drama that goes into boxing, the fact that you're physically punching each other.
Well, he said the last one was the only one that didn't go the distance,
I think.
And it's because
14.
In the 15th, his team wouldn't allow him to go back out.
Right.
Yeah. It set the stage for, I mean, that the sport for to have those kinds of rivalries.
Yeah, I would say that sort of is, you know, the rivalry that all boxing rivalries are built on.
Yeah.
So let's go Muhammad Ali and Joe Frazier, number five. All right, number four, baseball. I'll say Ted Williams and Joe DiMaggio. Again, you bring in the Boston-New York rivalry, then the two best players in the league. And again, contrast, right, is Ted Williams has the high average, probably the greatest hitter single-handedly of all time, but DiMaggio gets the wins and the championships and all of that, so different styles of people. I mean, just all of it. Like, put them two together, and I think that's probably number four.
Good.
Number three. I'm going to go to golf, sorry, Maura, for number three. And no,
two perfect shots, Michael.
I'm not going Jordan Spieth against himself, although that is a good rivalry these days as Jordan tries to talk himself in and out of whatever shot he wants. The great rivalry of golf, of course, is Arnold Palmer and Jack Nicklaus. Again, greatness versus popularity.
Jack Nicklaus.
Oh, you
not
can.
A big golf fan, but
Jack Nicklaus is okay.
Yeah.
Not Arnold Palmer and Arnie's Army.
He's cool too.
Jack Nicklaus won 18 majors. Arnie only won 7. But again, while Jack was the greatest player in the sport, Arnie was significantly more popular. So in that way, I would not put Phil Mickelson and Tiger Woods on there. That's a rivalry of sorts, but it's kind of one-sided, man. Like, one guy's just better than the other. Sorry.
Yeah.
So, I'm going to go with Arnie and Jack.
And they only got along for TV cameras. It's a lot more fun when I feel like those guys were actually friends.
Yeah, I don't believe those guys still like. I don't believe they like each other at all. I know they claim to get along, and they've certainly made a lot of money off of playing with each other. I don't believe
they're
they
not inviting
along.
Each other.
Now, the Brooks Koepka
Bryson
DeChambeau rivalry is certainly got the opportunity to be better than that, because there's some honest-to-goodness distaste there.
Mm-hmm.
I wish they hadn't put it aside to make the money, first at the Ryder Cup and then at the match they did this past year, because I like those two guys just flat-out disliking each other.
Fair.
We'll see what happens. We'll see where that goes. Still a little young. Number two, I wanted to put this number one because it's probably the most meaningful in my lifetime to me personally, would be Magic Johnson and Larry Bird. And I love that this one goes back to college. Right, Magic beat Bird in college in the finals, highest rated championship game in NCAA championship history, which is pretty cool. Then they met three times in the finals, Boston, New York, or Boston, LA, just that whole thing. I was such a huge Magic fan as a kid. I owned the Magic Bird book. Like, I was obsessed with this rivalry as a kid.
I love,
crazy to me, you're a
love Michael.
I just love like how much they disliked each other on the court.
Yes.
But then I think they kind of disliked each other early on overall, but it grew into this relationship where they actually like each other and
yeah,
a lot
and
of
ended
respect
up
there.
Playing on the dream team together. But there was, I mean, again, contrasting styles is what makes these rivalries so great. Larry was hard work and blue collar and a hick from Indiana, and Magic was Showtime, black guy, white guy, LA, Boston. I mean, just everything about it was totally different. Mm-hmm. And so the contrast there, as I talk it through, that was probably number one. But I think you probably got to go with Brady and Manning, number one overall. They met, 17 times? Five of them in the playoffs. Peyton won three out of five in the playoffs. Brady won more in the regular season, which is funny because that kind of reversed over the course of the rivalry. And again, at the beginning, especially, contrasting styles. Both guys were a little aw shucks in their own way, but Peyton was the number one overall pick, and the legacy of Archie Manning and legend and supposed to be the greatest of all time. And Brady's a sixth rounder who's not supposed to even be there, and yet Peyton's thrown for a gazillion yards and Brady's throwing screen passes, 2 yards from the line of scrimmage, and styles make fights, right? And so that's what makes so many of these rivalries great.
We don't have time for the other ones I wanted to mention, but there's a lot that you missed.
Like what? I mean, sure, you could have gone on and on.
Say Dale Jeff, I'm going to say.
Oh, that's a good one. That's a really
Chad
good one.
Chad Reed and James Bubba Stewart would have been a good one.
The what now?
Supercross, that was a good, okay. That's a really
I was
good
like,
rival.
What?
Jeremy McGrath, Jeff Emick, yeah. We can do this a long time.
Steve Lampson.
Oh, love Steve Lampson. Good reference.
Dude, I got
one of the honorable mentions I had on there was Gretzky, Lemieux.
Yeah, so I think of them, they overlapped a little bit, but I kind of think of Gretzky's era and then Lemieux's era more of a handing of the torch than a true rivalry where they were in their primes together. Bird and Magic is so great because they come up together through college. All right, we got to go. The Jake Salk matchup and rivalry apparently has been brewing now that he's saying, taking shots at me in the promos, for God's sakes. How old I am. Sheesh. All right, stick around for Jake and Stacey. They're young, but they're talented, and they're fun to listen to. They're up, and then we will be back with you guys tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. Matt Hasselbeck at 9. Goodbye.